It's the best of the worst. B-movie breakdown. It's the best of the worst. B-movie breakdown. It's the best of the worst. B-movie breakdown. It's the best of the worst. B-movie breakdown.
Welcome to the B-movie breakdown. I'm Corey.
I'm Gina.
I'm Ryan.
Sleepy Ryan.
Sleepy Ryan. I was sleepy. See? Gina for part of it.
Do you hear him snoring?
Yes.
Sleepy Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the B-Movie Breakdown, and this is a weekly podcast where you find the humor and enjoyment in low-budget, lesser-known films of the past and present, home the good, the bad, the what the fuck. This week's movie was not so much humorous. It was kind of enjoyable. It wasn't awful.
I don't think it was awful.
I remember.
It was just kind of there.
Yeah. Every time someone does Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Lon Chaney one is kind of like the famous one, right?
Yeah. But
it's like part of the Universal.
I like the Dick Cheney one better.
What? What does that even mean?
Where he accidentally shoots somebody.
Yeah.
Oops. He was playing John Wilkes Booth.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler alert.
Lincoln dies.
Whoopsies.
Each week's movie will be revealed in the prior episode, so you two can join in on the madness. You can listen if you subscribe on iTunes on our website, bnbpodcast.com, or on Stitcher. You can reach us on our site, our email, bnbpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, @bnbpodcast, or on Facebook. This week's movie was The Phantom of the Opera from 1989, a movie that I didn't realize existed until recently. I really like Robert Englund. I feel like sometimes he's overlooked because he was Freddy Krueger, and people kind of just, oh, that's Freddy.
I think he's more known as Buck.
As Buck?
Yeah, and he's here to fuck. Eaten alive.
Oh, that's right. He wasn't eaten alive. Forgot about that. See, whenever I hear that line, I always think of Kill Bill.
Yeah.
They say that in Kill Bill as well. Tarantino pulled it from Eaten Alive.
Yeah.
But I forgot that Robert Englund isn't Eaten Alive. But yeah, Robert Englund, he hasn't been in like all of like the greatest movies of all time. But I thought he did a really good job in this movie.
Yeah.
I thought, like, as far as things go, I expected like some cheesiness out of this.
I expected it to be way more cheesy than this.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, Robert Englund, you know, he's done some, like, more serious things in his earlier career, and then once he did Nightmare on Elm Street, it was horror movies from there on out, but
and it definitely has more of a, like, a horror twist on the Phantom of the Opera stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Some more, like, violence and goriness and things like that, but it wasn't as cheesy as the Nightmare movies.
Oh, no.
Turned into, I guess, because the first one's not so cheesy. It's more of a serious horror movie than the rest of them turned into. But I didn't think he was that awful in that. I didn't think this movie was all that bad. I don't think it was amazing.
Yeah. It was just a sleepy
I kind of feel like it was a movie.
It was very slow paced.
It was made out of sleepy juice.
It was slow paced, and I don't know if that is a testament to the, you know, like the novel or play.
Mm-hmm.
It was a novel originally, and this is more based on the novel than it is based on the Andrew Lloyd Webber play. I was reading a comparison with the original and other versions, and it says in this version of the Phantom of the Opera, the main action is transferred from Leroux's Paris opera house to a London opera house of the same time period. But unlike the original and most other adaptations, there's no falling chandelier scene.
Yeah, that's where.
Yeah, however, in many respects, this film is more faithful to the spirit and letter of the original than any other adaptation.
Well, jeez.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah, so this is a movie that was greatly overlooked, apparently, as far as adaptations of the Phantom of the Opera go. I mean, I've never heard anybody ever mention this movie.
Uh-uh.
I never even knew it existed. I knew that they made one a few years ago, and I know the original with Lon Chaney, that's kind of like the telltale.
The Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, and then there was the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. that kind of
made it into
the more the... You saw it 6 times?
No, 96. I said 96, but I was exaggerating, I guess. But
she also really liked Cats.
I was in grade school. No, I never saw Cats. It was Les Mis, this, and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat that I saw, like... I have all the weird, like, memorabilia, shirts, earrings. I don't know. I was a fucking nerd. I couldn't help it.
Were.
Whatever, man. Phantom of the Opera was pretty sweet. There's a the chandelier, like, literally comes down from the rafters on you when you go see it, like, in the theater.
Well, it's pretty sweet.
That sounds like a lie.
But, yeah, it says that in this movie there was a lot of the stuff in the original novel, like the way certain people were died... And things like that.
Were killed or were died?
Were killed. Like the way they died.
But it actually happened. Actually killed them.
Yes.
What?
In the original novel.
Only.
Except for the character Caroletta, whose head was in the punch bowl or whatever. She survives. But it says Richard, who is Raoul in the original, is actually set on fire. And the rat catcher guy, who was mainly left out of most adaptations, but he was in this one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Had, like, a grisly fight in the sewer, not necessarily as gruesome as this movie did. But I think one good thing about this movie was definitely the makeup effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought they did a really good job, especially the scene where he's taking off everything. And I think most Phantom of the Opera movies never really... have something like that where he's disguising himself. Well, not actually disguising himself, but rebuilding his face.
Mm-hmm.
It's when he wears a mask.
Yeah, if it's like and a that's half like the, face yeah, mask.
And he was doing the half face thing where he would cover it up when he's walking.
Covering up with a weird scarf.
But he was only covering it up, and it wasn't even like he was disfigured it.
Mm-hmm.
He had stitched...
Scars, yeah.
He had
face back
he
on.
He wanted to be Dark Man.
Yeah, Dark Man or The Shadow, that's what it kind of looked like. But both this movie, I mean, is before the Darkman easily, I'm sure, right? 89? Darkman was like 91, yeah, 92.
Darkman was 90s.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was also a surprise. I didn't know Molly Shannon
was
in this movie.
Weird.
It was pretty weird to see her. I don't know what she, maybe this might have been the first movie she ever did.
That was a good choice, Phantom of the Opera.
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, right? To get into the...
Well, that's like I told you about the girl that played, what's her face, Christine. It was bothering me the whole movie that she was from something.
Yes, this was literally the first thing Molly Shannon was ever in. First TV show, like, movie, anything. She was in this before she was in anything else. And after this, she wasn't even in many movies until... She played a homeless lady in Lawnmower Man 2.
Oh my god. Lawnmower Man. We should watch Lawnmower Man.
She was on some...
in general.
She was on some episodes of In Living Color, various characters.
Or, walk on the moon, float like a balloon. I used to love In Living Color.
She was on Ellen. Bunch of garbage, nothing.
90s TV.
Sister.
Sister.
Yeah, so literally, the first thing Molly Shannon, like, really ever did before she did SNL or anything or was this movie. So that's
just for 5 minutes in a super cool Phantom of the Opera movie.
So it's pretty weird for sure. Yeah, the movie starts off weird, though, because as far as the adaptation goes, the core of it, I'm sure, is faithful.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning and end, not as much. I don't really understand why they did the beginning and end the way they did it. Maybe to put their own little twist on it. Other than that, because it starts off in modern-day New York. Well, modern-day is 1989 New York. And...
Towers. Towers everywhere.
Yeah, there's towers, as in the Twin Towers. There's towers, as in Tower Records. There was even a producer with the last name Tower.
Conspiracy?
Foreshadowing.
So much foreshadowing. It's just,
we'll never know.
It's out of control. But yeah, and so it starts off in the beginning with this Christine character, and she is looking for the perfect piece for her audition.
Yeah.
And Molly Shannon is some sort of like bookkeeper
super
or something.
Super book nerd. She's just in a basement with a million books.
She was working for a rare and discontinued bookstore.
Whoa. Yeah, there was tons of books in there. And she was like, her friend came in, she's like, look what I found. And it was like some weird old piece of music, right?
Kinda remembered me, or reminded me of, what was that Johnny Depp movie? Was that From Hell?
Yeah.
Where he was like the book dealer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like all the shops he went into in that movie were exactly like the one that she worked in.
Yeah.
And the piece of music that she was looking for or found was Don Juan Triumphant. And it was this piece written by Eric Dessler,
uh-huh.
who is the Phantom of the Opera. And she goes to... Well, she is first... The weird part... These are the parts that make no sense and are the troublesome parts of this movie.
Hmm.
Is when she's looking through the book and all of a sudden blood on her hands.
All right, she's like, whoa!
And then blood disappears. And then you're kind of like, oh, this, I didn't... I thought the movie was going to stay...
Weird.
Like... Not like cheesy. Weird, but like in modern time.
Oh, right.
I didn't know that it was going to transport. Well,
they
probably thought
during the 80s if they were just like, here's a time, what you call it.
Movie could exist from like the time period it's supposed to take place in.
A period piece. Boring.
Yeah, who wants
it
to see
it? It was partially boring. It was boring.
There were parts of this that were boring, for sure.
I mean, but from it's just what like, I thought, expected.
It's just like, yeah. Well,
Tim
like,
Curry came in and did the time warp, so...
Yeah.
I wish he would've.
1881, who wants to see that shit? We give, all we care about is 1989 right now.
We're in a time warp.
Yeah, so she's at her audition, she's singing, Molly Shannon's playing the piano for her. Everyone's like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing. And the director, like, sits up in his chair more.
Oh yeah, it was like, huh?
The stagehands are, like, looking over the side. Everyone's all, like, up in arms over this. And then she gets hit in the head with a fucking bag.
a sandbag.
Yeah, sandbag.
One of the counterweights for the backdrop.
Yeah, she gets hit in the head with a sandbag and is knocked unconscious and thrown through a mirror.
Yeah, well, there's like a lot of weird spinning interspliced yeah. with...
Right here, it was very weird because it was like audition, the bag fell, hit her... She goes through, there's horses.
She's like spinning through the air like, no!
There's like a guy like talking. And it was very confusing at this point. And all of a sudden, it's 1881. And you were convinced it was time travel.
I thought that he like... I thought that this he was like in her
subconscious. This is much more fantastical.
He like sucked her back in time and wanted her so bad because he heard she was such a good singer saying that part so great. He was like... Get back into the past and like sucked her through a time.
That's a
vortex.
Much more fantastical
but then, well, then
thing that actually happened.
Well, then I was like, well, she probably just got bonked on the head. Like, fucking, what you call it style, Wizard of Oz.
But it was, but it wasn't.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, so it was partially that he liked her so much he sucked her back
in time. Well, he didn't suck her back in time, it actually just happened back then. Like, there was another Christine then.
She was like, reliving a life.
Yes, it's almost like...
Life.
Well, like in Highlander, like, he keeps falling in love with, like, the same woman. But it's not the same woman, it's like the timeline.
I understand.
It's an ancestor.
Like an ancestor of this woman, and she always looks the same.
I got it.
Like that.
Well, whatever happened, it was so weird. It doesn't make any sense. She woke up with a fez on her head. Playing like a boy or something. I don't know.
Was that what was going on?
I don't know.
She was playing a boy?
She wasn't playing a good part. She was playing a shitty part. And then it wasn't until that lady got grabbed by the skinless man.
Yeah. Well, and then
skipping ahead.
You're cut pretty, I mean, straight to him putting skin on his face.
Yeah.
You're introduced to the Phantom very early on. And immediately he ends up killing this stagehand. He killed him because he was criticizing Christine, like making fun of her in some sort of way.
I think he was mad he bopped her on the head.
Alright, yeah.
I don't really know what was
happening. I think that anybody he killed was because they
was, like,
did...
protecting her.
They wronged her in some sort of way.
He was obsessed with her.
And then when he killed him... What did he say? You're suspended?
Yeah, he's like, I don't remember the words leading up to it, but I just remember him being like, you're suspended, and then he pushed him, and this rope, like, was like, around his ankle, and then he fell off the rafter upside down and was suspended from the rafter. And then he, like, hoisted him back up, and when he hoisted him back up, the momentum that he would keep going up through the air. He just waited for him and, like, stuck his knife out. And as the blood, like, sprayed on his face, he just made this sick, like, coming face. Like, oh, yeah, blood. Vengeance, blood. And, yeah, it was really weird. Blood. Yeah. And then the cut scene cut after that. So there are, like, the more cheesy, there were, like, cheesy yeah, there horror were some. Elements in it.
And then there were those scenes, like, there's one after this, when she's just by herself, singing to herself.
That was the worst.
It was pretty weird and random. She even did it in the beginning of the movie, when she was reading through the book, she's like, Don Juan!
Well, yeah, even, well, that's when, like, she and Molly Shannon are talking, and she's like, did you know he was a killer? And she was like, oh, but his words are so nice. Oh! I'm like, no!
Like, yeah, it was like, there were parts of this movie where I'm like, oh, this is gonna be, like, a musical. Yeah. And then, okay, it wasn't a musical, but then there was these random parts yeah. where they would just sing. But then, when she's by herself, there's, like, he's talking to her.
Yeah, he's like, hey! And but his face is, like, partially fire. How and what
he's projecting his voice, I don't know if it's because he has...
I think she can
He has some sort of, like, fantastical powers where he can project his voice through fire.
He's a phantom.
And things like that.
Well, she can see him, like, she could see he was illuminated by some kind of blue light. And he had, like, fire on his face, but, like, reflected fire. I don't know. It was wearing a hood. And he was like, yeah, great. Well, I really like you.
In this version of the Phantom of the Opera, he is burned by the touch of the devil. And the devil is played by a midget. A very scary midget.
Yeah.
But then there was also...
His voice was really weird.
But the thing is, there was the midget, but then it was also during that same scene, a man in a red outfit who yeah, was like was a devil person, like making somebody sign their soul.
Yeah, but that was on the opera, in the opera.
That was actually happening in the opera? Yeah. Are we sure about that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was in the opera.
It was in the opera.
I was lost because I thought we were just seeing a flashback and nothing else. And I was like, why is there a flashback within a flashback?
I think it was just symbolism.
Yeah, it was like, that guy was all red. Yeah.
But then the midget had like this super deep voice. Mm-hmm.
He had a superimposed deep voice.
He was no Peter.
He was like, voice. We are yeah, like, you must sign it. Do you want your music to live forever
yeah.
or yourself to live?
But in reality... They both live forever.
Well, he never...
Except he was decomposing the entire movie.
Yeah, he could never show his fate. Like, that was essentially the deal. Like, your music will live forever, but you'll never be able to have recognition for it because
well,
you're disfigured.
Well, he never really he communicated just went out and said, you
know,
that to him.
He could have just went out and been like, you know what? Devil fucked up my face. I wrote this shit. Give me some credit. Devil fucked up my face.
I don't know about that. The
Nobody
midget,
would have believed him.
The midget guy just, like, puts his... fingers on his forehead for like a few minutes and then it's like
and it fucked up his entire face plus back of his head.
And the midget wasn't dressed like a devil person.
He had like weird crazy like curly eyebrows.
Curly eyebrows.
And like some like weird little mustache going like oh he's a
wasn't
creepy little
red,
devil guy.
No, it was weird.
He was dressed in all black.
And he at first he was just like Miss I like the way you play and like coming down the stairs and like talking to him. He never said like hey, I'm the devil. I'm gonna burn your face. Like these are. He just said, "Okay, I want."
He said he's. They said something about selling your soul to the devil. So that was where I understood that he was the devil.
That's what he was doing. Yeah, but I didn't. I just felt like he didn't communicate very clearly who he was.
Well, he probably
he was just a midget, and all of a sudden he grabbed
already,
that guy's face. And it was
Eric
burnt.
Dessler probably already knew that he was the devil, so he didn't know he needed to know again that he was the devil. We needed to know, but
I guess.
Not the character.
That's why there was the other part with the opera, because it was like, in case these idiots don't understand this, midget's supposed to be
But I didn't understand the opera part. I understood the midget part more than I understood the opera part.
I didn't understand some parts of this movie. I was like, okay. And then, I was glad that I got What's-Her-Face down, though. The Christine girl from... What was it?
When a Stranger Calls Back. That's a strange pull. I don't know how many people that have... I've never seen When a Stranger
it's
Calls
scared,
Back.
You know why? Because it scared the fucking shit out of me when I was little.
I've seen When a Stranger Calls, the original. I've never seen When a Stranger Calls Back.
The other one is like, yeah, after the kids, like, die or something, and she has, like, their clothes in her apartment. And in this one, like, too, the killer guy, like, paints his body all weird colors and stands up against a wall and, like, hides from her. I think that's the second one. I don't remember. The second one is Carole King, right?
She's in both of them.
Oh. She's
in the original one. She's, like, much younger in the original one.
He's still trying to come after her in the second one, though, because the kids are dead, and I remember she has, like, their clothes hanging in her closet.
Carole Kane. Why do you keep saying King?
I don't know. It's the wrong person. Carole King's a singer, isn't she? Yeah. Carole Kane's the one that talks like this.
She does. Yeah, and I don't know. Why do they make a sequel to it? Like, when a stranger calls.
I think he does.
Before there was Scream, there was The Stranger.
The both of them scared me equally, though, about Home Invaders, because there is a part he, like, paints his whole body to match this brick or something that someone has in their house, and he just stands up against it, and you can't see him until he opens his eyes, and he, like, lunges out and kills her.
Is Carole Kane still alive?
I thought so.
Oh, yeah, she was on Girls last season. Alright, yeah. I remember now.
I wonder how Lena Dunham's doing on Saturday Night Live. Or did already, probably. I don't know what time
it is. It's still going. She probably hasn't shown her boobs yet, so.
Well. You know, she wants to. I wonder if they'll make fun of girls. I hope so.
I wonder if they'll make fun of her boobs.
Probably. They're pretty slopey.
Sausage patties.
I don't know.
You think her boobs look like sausage patties? Sausage patties are flat.
And round. I thought her
boobs But they're round were, like, the other way. They're not round like the way boobs are round.
I thought her boobs were like slopey.
Her boobs aren't round. They're more like
flat foot long hot dogs.
Flat foot long hot dogs.
Just dangling there, all desiccated and disgusting.
I don't think that's what they look like.
Sounds like chopped up hot dogs. Like a bunch of mutilated. Look like weird. So you're saying that they look like mutilated hot dogs?
No, just desiccated. Long and dried out.
Long, flat hot dogs.
I would say, like, more like, small, like, road cones that were run over a few times.
Whoa. I just think they're slopey.
Yeah, they're like cone.
She just has a weird case of, like, fat little girl boobs, where it's, like, the boobs are little, and she has a big belly. And they're just awkwardly weird looking against the rest of her body. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I would rather look at her boobs and her naked than, like, that one. We watched the one episode of the beach one or whatever. Or I did.
Yeah.
Where she was, like, in the bikini the whole time. That was painful.
It was very gross.
It was
painful.
I'm
a very, like, open about show your body or whatever. Yeah. If you had, like, don't fat shaming, whatever, who cares. But that... Why?
Mainly,
too much is too much.
Mainly my concern was, it was too much, and also, I just was bothered that she just never changed her clothes. I was like, everybody else has changed their clothes.
And they went to the store and, like, told her she wouldn't be able to. They went to the store and she's like, you can't go in there like that. And then she's like, yeah, I can, it's a beach town. And they're like, this is sick, get out.
She could have changed her clothes.
Well.
Got that rotten crotch.
She's a writer.
She got that Mary Jane rotten crotch. She loves
that gritty kitty.
Oh.
She loves that gritty kitty.
There was this girl in my office.
The sand in the vagina.
There was this one,
rotten crotch.
The other day, this girl staff I work with was like, get the sand out of your vagina. And this other girl I work with didn't know what that meant. And she was like 23. And I was like, do you don't know, like, the instance of getting sand in your vagina? That's not where you don't.
Is that she was a like, pleasant she like didn't understand.
Well, no, she like had never heard of the phrase, like, sand in the vagina, or the, like, I don't know. She didn't understand what the phrase meant when she said, get the sand out of your vagina. What about
stick in the ass?
I mean, I don't know how that really correlates to...
Well, I mean, it's just an uncomfortable thing that could happen to your body.
I've never just had a stick in my ass.
Why do you have a stick in your ass?
I don't think
it's... The expression?
Yeah, it's an expression.
Yeah.
Get the stick out of your ass. Yeah.
Like sand.
I understand that.
Just an uncomfortable thing to have.
But, right. But you shouldn't have sticks in your ass.
You shouldn't have sand in your vagina, but it
but
happens.
But that happens more than just an accidental stick in the ass.
Yeah, it's not like...
Says you.
How many accidental sticks are going into your ass, Ryan?
Every fucking ER visit. I don't know how it happened. I fell on it.
Uh-huh.
What?
I don't know. What did he say when he woke up in the middle of the movie?
Oh, Ryan fell asleep halfway through, and then he woke up and said, someone died in your department. Wouldn't you want to switch schools, too?
I think, yeah, that's what he said. Or if that many people died in your department, wouldn't you switch schools?
I meant theater.
I was quite lost. I said
school.
Yeah, he meant theater. I was sleepy. Mm-hmm. That's when I was like, are you asleep?
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in it.
Mm-hmm. No shame in my game.
No shame.
What else happened?
There was the bathtub scene where the woman was in the bathtub and then she found the dead body.
Yeah.
It was the first introduction to that he is skinning people alive for their skin to rebuild his face over and over again. Other than that, I wasn't too sure. And then you weren't even sure that that's what he was doing yet.
Yeah, I didn't know what he was doing.
Like,
for a while.
He skinned him. I was like, oh. And then you figured it out when he was skinning somebody else.
Well,
like
the opening scene, he was sewing patches of flesh to
his
face.
Where they came from.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know where it came from, so I don't fucking know.
I just assumed it was from a human.
Could have been pig face.
It could have been from anywhere. So I don't know.
So when there was that skinned corpse in the closet that she found.
Eli Roth.
And then he, like, woke back up and was like, huh? And he, like, lunged. I thought it was funny because she did, like, this little boop, 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 like, in the
Yeah,
blood.
That was weird. It was a very, like, comical moment.
Well,
it's
because she was wearing a towel.
Well, then
grabbed the towel and unraveled it.
Yeah. But then she also started slipping on the blood.
So she was, like, a human top.
Yeah.
It was very comical the way her feet were moving and, like, she fell back. It was very, like, silly. And then she screamed so loud that she lost her voice.
Yeah.
And couldn't do the role.
That's just cray.
I think it's a comedy crew.
And Robert Englund, also, when his face was all stitched together, and he was just, like, the Phantom without the fucked up face, he looked like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, when he was coming into the booth.
Or David Lee Roth.
Mostly
like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Depending on how long his hair was at the time.
The scene from Mrs. Doubtfire where Robin Williams gets caught by the job lady with no makeup on. He just has to wear that thing and put the pie on his face.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like Mrs. Doubtfire.
He did. It was pretty darn weird.
He got his own special chair because he haunts.
One thing I want to know about the Phantom, what was the deal with the coins?
It was just his way of being like...
It was his calling card?
I guess, yeah.
Like, why did he put one on the seat when he left? He pooped it on the seat.
He was like, this is meant... Thanks for the show. I feel like that's what it was.
And then he put a rose there.
Yeah.
Like, who was supposed to find this?
Oh, the Phantom left. Because no one else sat in that seat.
But then why would anybody go check?
It's like Santa Claus when he leaves you milk and cookies.
Or the Tooth Fairy.
But it's not like Santa Claus
when he leaves gold coins under the hooker's pillow.
One, Santa Claus doesn't leave milk and cookies. You leave them for Santa Claus.
But then they're eaten. So you come back and you always look to see that
they're eaten by...
your parents.
Your parents, not a man who actually exists. Because the Phantom did in fact exist. He was a man.
Well, my dad exists, and he ate the milk and cookies.
Yeah, but your dad's not Santa Claus.
He had a beard.
Grizzly Adams had a beard.
Grizzly Adams did have a beard.
I ate a piece of shit like you for breakfast.
You eat shit for breakfast?
No.
Alright.
But yeah, we're just going to quote Happy Gilmore for the rest of the episode.
Uh-huh.
The coin thing was kind of weird. I guess it was his calling card.
When he put it on people's eyes.
Yeah, when he killed them.
It's for when you die. You can pay the fairy.
But also he used it as payment. When he paid a whore.
Well, he left it under her pillow because she lost her tooth.
33 minutes into the movie.
Because she lost it. He's not only the Phantom of the Opera, he's the Tooth Fairy.
Of the opera.
Yeah.
of whores.
Of whores.
Of whores, Ryan. Whores. Not opera. Whores don't like opera. This movie taught me one thing.
That one...
It was whores don't like the opera.
That one
whores
prostitute...
are so dumb, they probably use Internet Explorer.
What?
Yeah, I guess.
The one prostitute, like, didn't even... It was really...
He
still got that one.
Just
I don't
continue.
Know what that meant.
It was weird.
The one prostitute that he was with, he, like, He's like, no, trying to not let her see his face. But then there were, it wasn't dark in the room they were in. I just don't understand how she couldn't have been like, oh, this guy's fucking
Well, you gotta think of movie lighting.
For money.
You gotta think of movie lighting, though.
I guess.
Like, in movies, they'll shut the light off in a room, and you can still see the characters.
Right.
Because it's the lighting, so you can still see the characters.
It just seems silly.
They need to make a movie with realistic lighting.
You probably won't, so you couldn't see anybody?
Yeah.
Apparently there was a sequel
that, this?
Yes, that was being planned called Phantom of New York.
Oh my god.
But like, it was like, never shot.
Like Hercules in New York?
Yeah, except for this actually did set up how it could be a Phantom in New York.
Or unlike, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about Jason on a boat. That's what that movie should have been called, Jason on a Boat. But they called it Jason Takes Manhattan because we get 30 minutes of him in New York. But he does punch a guy's head off, so it's pretty sweet. Apparently, also, there's a disclaimer at the end of this movie that says, this motion picture is not associated with any current or prior stage play or motion picture of the same title.
Well, I had to.
Why?
It's like, we don't know them.
Like, yeah, they wanted to be better because they were the most faithful adaptation of this work.
We're not singing like that Andrew Lloyd Webber guy.
Well, there's apparently been, according to, in 2007, there were 40 adaptations of this. Shorts, cartoons, TV.
That makes sense.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
The Enduring Creeper story.
Yes.
Unrequited love from a fucking weirdo stalker with a fucked up face.
It happens in real life.
It does happen in real life. More so, it usually just happens at the bar.
Creepers with fucked up faces. Drunk.
Yeah, and then you turn.
And you turn around like, and you touch their face and their skin starts falling off. Yeah. And you're like, oh my god, I love you.
Well, that didn't happen. That doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen.
I was never the type to get it to the end of the night where I looked across the bed and was like, what the fuck? I never was like that. I made sure that those guards were up before I ever even took a sip of alcohol. And just be like, I would sick my bitchy friends on whoever came over to talk to me if I went out. It's like, why are you here? Who are you? Leave us alone. Like that.
Oh.
I'd just be like, guys, just watch me.
She's great at parties.
Go away. You have to be careful. Otherwise you could get phantomed.
So that's another lesson learned from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful or you're going to get phantomed.
Mm-hmm. Always have a backup.
He was phantoming a lot in this movie, aside from his love of whores. He was very picky when choosing a whore, too. So at least he has some standards when choosing his whore.
Well, what did he tell the one, you know nothing of devotion or something weird? And then the other one was just like, hello.
He was like,
I'll go with you.
No, and then he was like, no, and then he walked down the stairs, and then he saw the other one, and she just walked by him, and she wasn't even interested in him, and then he just put his arm out.
Oh, that's why, because she played hard to get.
Yeah, so he liked
no whore that plays hard to get.
Yeah. Huh.
And then 33 minutes into the movie, there were boobs.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I wrote a quote down. I don't know. I can't read what this says. But yeah, the main one big thing in this movie is that that nobody thinks that Christine can pull this off.
Yeah, she
nobody
sucks.
Will sell. She won't sell tickets. Like nobody wants to see this. Bill Nighy is
the
manager of the theater because the one guy was the owner, Richard, who fell in love with Christine.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Nighy was like his assistant or
co-owner.
Manager, or something like that.
A young Bill Nighy. A youngish.
He wasn't that young. He was
youngish.
This was only 25
younger,
years ago.
No, younger than Love Actually. Love, which I hate, but it's
younger
a reference
than,
point.
Younger than I, Frankenstein.
Shaun of the Dead.
Young Frankenstein. That's a better reference because
sick.
It's a movie we watched on for this podcast.
Never.
What do you mean never?
No, I didn't like it.
I'd have to say, if I had to pick a favorite part in this movie, I really like the part with him and the three, like, street toughs.
Oh, yeah.
I did kind of enjoy that part. It was, like, him taking them on, and it was, like, a little tiny fight scene, and he murdered them all, and he was phantoming all over the place.
Didn't he smush one in the, is that the one?
No, or that no, was in the bathhouse.
Okay, got
but
it.
But I kind of liked how he was, like, phantoming all over. He was just, like, appearing.
Now you see.
Yeah, he would go across the room and be like, here I am.
That was when I thought maybe it was going to turn more into a horror movie. And then it didn't, but then it did in spots, but then it didn't, but then it did in spots.
That's why it was weird.
Yeah, but the funny thing, he kills a critic who wrote a bad review.
Yeah.
For Christine in a bathhouse, death by towel. You guys said he gouged his eyes out.
That's what it looked like.
Okay, I do understand. I understand the sockets are bleeding, but all he did was wrap a towel around the guy's head and tie it really tight and pull on it.
I don't know what happens in bathhouses.
There was so much pressure that his eyes popped.
Yes, death by towel.
Okay.
Yeah, and he also skinned that guy. And he skinned the three dudes in the alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
He's skinning everybody.
He needs a face.
Yes. There's also that scene where she's in the graveyard. I don't know why she was there visiting her father's grave.
Yeah.
She thought it was her dad who was talking to her the whole time.
Yeah, he's like playing the fucking violin.
And he's playing the violin, and then that Richard guy shows up at the graveyard. Why was he like, no, Christine, no? Like,
oh, because she was like going off with him.
But she didn't know. He didn't think the phantom existed.
I know, he didn't know who that was. Yeah, I don't know.
So I didn't know why he was there, like screaming and throwing a fit. Yeah, and then when she goes with the Phantom down to his lair, she's like, where are you taking me? Like, he wasn't even kidnapping her. She voluntarily went down there.
He was like, oh, you want to see my man cave?
Maybe he glamored her, like, on True Blood.
Well, he put a ring on her finger.
He liked it, yeah, so he put a ring
there
on
you
it.
Go. I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Beyonce'd her.
And another weird part in this movie was the police officer that was hired to investigate the murders and things. He, from Scotland Yard, they had that weird conversation in a church.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do they have it there? And then he kept having to tell the guy to be quiet.
When?
When they had the conversation in the church. They're in the pews and they're sitting there.
It's like, shh.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Ground.
Like, why was he telling him, why would they even meet there if you can't even talk about anything? You gotta be quiet.
You gotta be covert.
Yeah, it was very weird. And that's when he told him that he figured out the Phantom was an actual real
guy
thing. Yeah, and then that's when they show that scene of him pulling off the skin, the wig comes off, the teeth
that's
come out.
That's when I saw it.
That might have been my favorite part of the movie because it was just very well done as far as makeup effects go and things like that. The skin cutting off, tore the nose off. He had like a plastic.
It was like a plastic weird
fake nose to put under his nose. How did he make that in 1881? It was very nice, very well made. I was very impressed. Like his
it was
work.
Just a piece of plastic. I don't.
But it looked just like a nose. Like he did a very good job. I don't know how he decided to, how he did this, but
it was like fishbone or something.
It was. It looked like glass. Like maybe it's glass blowing. I don't know. I was like, wow, it's very well fabricated. I was just kind of thrown away.
I didn't even think of that, because it did look like plastic.
Yeah. Then there was that mask party.
He had the masquerade.
The papier-mâché skull mask.
Yeah, he had a papier-mâché.
Like a candy skull.
Or I'm going to say it was a real skull.
I don't know about that.
Because he's a
murderer. Put your head inside of a real skull, human head.
He's putting people's skin on his face.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean his head can fit in a different person's skull.
It didn't fit on it perfectly. It kind of fit. It was the skull was smaller.
I don't know. It didn't look like a Homo sapien skull. Probably like Australopithecus.
Oh my god.
Of course, man. I don't agree with them.
Oh my god.
It was so wide.
It wasn't.
He killed a wide person's face.
A wide person's face.
A wide-faced person.
Kill that face. I don't know.
He killed that face so good.
I think it was like paper mache.
It was probably paper mache. See, where's he getting all these resources when he's down
in
his dungeon?
He's had to make his face his whole life. That takes some ingenuity.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. and I didn't understand why the rat collector guy, the peasant who like kept his like lair clean and stuff, his, like, lair janitor guy. Why was he going to sell him out so quickly?
Probably is
weirdo. Offered him more money?
Doesn't want to deal with him. Sick, putting his face on all the time.
Well, this guy's a fucking rat collector.
I don't want to be that guy's lackey.
This guy's a fucking rat catcher.
He just makes him happy. He doesn't have to put his face back on. He's just playing with some rats.
Yeah, I don't know. And then he murdered that guy.
Yeah, he did murder him, because he was a turncoat. He was going to sell him out in a second.
Yeah, it was. I was just like, I can't believe you murdered that guy. But yeah, then they're in the Phantom's lair. There's like a huge kind of fight. He's tricking them constantly, being phantomy all over the place. He rips the one guy's heart out.
Yeah.
The second cop, like the partner to the main cop.
Yeah.
He ripped. Graphic. Well, he killed the one cop who was the only cop dressed as like a police officer. He slit that guy's throat, and then that guy got shot like six times by the other cop on accident. And then he ripped that guy's heart out, and then he stabbed Richard and set him on fire.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Which I think he just backed him into a wall full of candles.
Yeah, he did. He backed him up against a big thing of candles, and then he was just, I looked up and he was just on fire.
And then Christine and the cop shoot him. They're both shooting the Phantom. He's apparently dying. So you're assuming he's about to die. She pushes a candle stand into a mirror because she knows. Like, this is why I didn't understand. Like, how did she figure out? Like, this is when she knew she was dreaming. Like, this was like the scene, like, oh, I'm dreaming. I need to get out of here.
Like Inception.
Yeah, I guess, but without the actual realizing you're dreaming.
She needed a kick.
It was not a lucid dream. It was her just, she had to pee.
Yeah.
Oh, I had to pee. And
right.
I woke up.
And
or
she
just,
didn't.
Or she just woke up from being unconscious. And
if she had really had to pee in her dream, she would have dreamt that she was going to the toilet.
That's not true.
It is true.
No, when I have to pee, I wake up in the middle of the night.
When I have to pee, I dream that I'm going to the bathroom.
That's you, though.
Every single time.
Well, when I have to pee, sometimes I'm having like a nightmare. And I wake up and I'm like, oh, I have to pee. Okay.
But you do have, you get nightmares if you have to pee when you just go to sleep,
Yeah, but
maybe
I don't...
that's what happened to her.
Was a toilet. I'm not afraid of toilets.
She got knocked on the head. She had to pee really bad while she was giving her performance. She had all kind of fucked up nightmares about it. And then her body was like, get to the bathroom mirror and pee on yourself on the stage.
She breaks the mirror. It goes back to modern day. Everyone's concerned. Like, you got the role.
Like, Wizard of Oz time.
Yeah, it was very Wizard of Oz-like. And then Robert Englund is the producer of this play. Or musical, or opera, what have you.
She's like a namby-pamby.
He starts kind of, like, putting the moves on her a little bit. Next thing you know, they're at his apartment.
Yeah, that moved pretty fast.
Then. Yeah, it was very quick. Maybe she really wanted the role, so she was willing to do anything for this role. She is messing around on his computer and sees the Don Juan triumphant music on a floppy disk, puts it in, listens to some MIDI files of the Don Juan triumphant as he's in his room. What did he have to go back there for? Like a scarf or something? I don't know.
Scarf?
He came back with a scarf on, so I don't know. He was like, I forgot my scarf.
It's like a theater director. He has a ponytail.
Yeah.
He's like meek and soft-spoken. Like, why would you...
His apartment was very early
90s. Go back to that apartment.
He has a very early 90s apartment. Very... I mean, he had the ponytail. That was a very 90s...
Well, that's 90s,
look.
But also, I mean, I don't know. He's a theater director. Like, why would you even consider...
He's a producer.
Unless you thought it... Or whatever. But what if he... Why would you go back to his house with him if you...
For the role.
Yeah, but he seemed gay. I would have been like, what's
But he
point?
Wasn't gay. He was the Phantom.
I understand.
Because you go to his room, and he has, like, a little thing on his face, and he's like, son of a bitch. And he, like... And then he opens up this case, and he has all these faces. So, like, because of, like, technological breakthroughs he's been developing on his own, I guess, he has, like, other faces in, like, this cryogenic, like, containment center. And he comes back, and she's like, he's like telling her, he's, I don't know, some sort of jargon bullshit.
Yeah.
And then she realized, she's like, you're him. And he's like, well, who else would you expect? So it was real. Everything that happened did happen.
Why did she go with him then if she was like,
she didn't know
this guy looks
him.
Like the creeper from
But she
my
never
dream.
Saw his like real face because she only saw his face when it was all fucking stitched up.
You keep
up.
Saying no one ever saw his face, but his face was in the light and the dark running around.
Yes,
it was
in the light, but it was all stitched up and fucked up Mrs. Doubtfire looking. When it's just normal Robert Englund, he does not look like Mrs.
Yeah.
Doubtfire. He just looks like a normal guy.
Yes. This is just...
Well, then, he's like, you have to choose the music or love. And then they kiss. Ew. And then she rips his face off.
Yeah. Ew.
And I thought that was pretty neat. Like, she ripped it. And then his face, but his whole face came off. Not just the spots.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe over time. Over time, he realized, damage. I'm just going to cut the rest off and just make this one face thing. Because that's what he had. It was like a...
Oh, yeah, then she totally just ripped it off.
And then she rips it off, and it's all black and gooey and, like, blah, all underneath. That was pretty cool. I liked how, like, you could still see some of the skin and scalp, and it was kind of like you could almost see underneath it.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool looking. And then she stabs him, and she says, not forever. Stabs him, and she runs off with the Don Juan triumphant music and rips it up and throws it down the sewer.
No one can ever know.
Well, the key was because the only way he would stay alive forever and the music would live forever was that as long as nobody destroyed it.
Yeah.
But then it existed in book form as well because she found the book.
It would have existed everywhere then if he lived that long and it was hanging around.
Maybe it had to be his copy.
Maybe.
It couldn't be a reprint. It had to be his copy printed from his 1989 IBM printer.
By the time she ripped his face off, I was done with this movie.
She throws it down the drain. He dies, like, officially, like, die, apparently. And then she's walking down the street. There's a guy playing the violin, the same song that he was playing her in the graveyard. She tips the guy. She looks back. It's not him. Well, you don't see that it's not him, because he never shows his face, but she's like, oh, reassurance, not him. Move on.
Hey, wait a minute.
But yeah, this movie, it just kind of is, and
just,
yeah. I do like this one review I found on IMDb. It is quite hilarious. Granted, this is from somebody from Malaysia.
Oh, wow.
Here we go. I never watched Phantom of the Opera 1989 yet, but I would like to add some comment for Phantom of the Opera 2004.
What?
It is an excellent musical. I salute the scriptwriter. The cinematographer, also very good. The music, great. I love part when I saw Christine's eyes show some love towards Phantom. But I can stand to see Phantom sad when Christine told Raoul that she loved him. It is the only part makes me feel like my heart is broken. The idea of the opera is great. When the idea is combined with music and other elements, it is majestic.
He's talking about the Amanda Seyfried one.
Yes. So far, I have no negative comment for the Phantom of the Opera 2004. I have heard a comment from a mother of my friend said, Phantom in 1989 opera, quite scary. I did some research on that, and yep, the mask, quite scary. Hope to watch Phantom 1989 opera very soon. To the scriptwriter, you've done remarkable work. Where did you get such idea? It once reminded me of my friend Max. See ya. Hope to see another great job from you guys.
What? I hope you guys do it again.
That was from Hans.
This reminds me of my friend Max.
Han Zing from Malaysia wrote that review in April
2006. Wow. He really liked that Gerard Butler one.
I guess. Well, why would you put a review?
Well, I know this isn't this one, but you'll get it over to the other guys. I'm sure all you Phantoms know each other.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like something. This one lady in Alaska loved this fucking movie.
Well, she is living in Alaska, so.
She said the violence in it does not take away from the full impact of the story. It's just unnecessary violence. But it fits into the storyline.
So
it fits, but it's unnecessary. You know, so which one is it?
People are to die, that's Violet.
Yeah, and she said Robert Englund is perfectly cast. So there we go.
It did play a pretty good creep.
But she said Christine is disappointing.
Well, she was like a wide-eyed, like, 80s. She was like that in Whatchacallit, too. Stranger Calls Back. She was just whatever. The only reason I remember is because I confuse her with Winnie. Wonder Years.
Yeah. Winnie from the Wonder Years. The guy who directed this movie, he actually, before this, directed Halloween 4.
Oh,
the return of Michael Myers, so the one after the mask incident. He directed Marked for Death, yeah. Steven Seagal movie. He directed Free Willy 2, The Adventure Home. Murder at 1600, Wesley Snipes. And then a fuckload of TV shows, like 24, Prison Break, Dollhouse, Criminal Minds, Drop Dead Diva, Bones.
Drop Dead Diva.
The Wire.
No, not The Wire. One episode of X-Files. But, yeah, it's, I thought that was weird that this guy directed, the same guy directed this, and Steven Seagal went on to direct Free Willy 2, The Adventure Home.
Just weird.
And Anaconda, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
Duh,
because that duh moment. But yeah, this movie just was. It just was.
I wasn't a huge fan. I
thought there was going to be more to this than there was.
I made Ryan go to sleep and think stuff was happening in a school.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know.
Well, what do we decide we're watching next?
So next, we are going to watch the 1994 fourth movie in the if you want to go into the like original slate of Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies, this has to be the worst one. I don't care for any of the prequels or remakes that have happened, but this one is. It might not be as bad as those because it probably has some cheesy good gore to it. It's perfectly
fitting for the show.
It is. And the movie we're talking about is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, starring Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
Yeah. Two people who've won Academy Awards starring in this movie.
You gotta start somewhere. And
they turn Leatherface into a tranny. In this movie. Spoilers. Sorry. It's on the poster. He's a tranny. She. I don't. Regardless, why did they do that? This movie had a budget of $600,000. And it only made $94,000.
Wow.
It might have been only released on video. I can't tell
you. I don't know.
It might have been in theaters. I don't really know. It's the fourth movie in the original series of Texas Chainsaw movies.
Mm-hmm.
The third one's not that great either. I really like this. The first two, the third one, it is what it is. Actually, Viggo Mortensen's in the third one. He plays one of the family members, bad guys.
Does he show his butt?
No, he doesn't show his butt. Uh-huh. But he is creepy and murdery.
Viggo.
In it.
And
the chainsaw in the third one's like,
yeah,
very I remember long. That. It's very long and absurd, and it's engraved on it says the Saw's family.
Oh, so God.
It's a very absurd, campy. Very campy. The trailer for the third one is absolutely hilarious and horrendous. But yeah, next week Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation. A little hard to find as far as I've seen online. So. If you've seen it before, a lot of people have seen it, because it's fucking... It used to be on all the time when it came out. I remember seeing it on HBO and USA and TNT and shit like that. And every now and then you'll see it on, like, Encore or IFC or something. At least,
like, 9,400 people saw it in the theater.
4B Movie Breakdown, I'm Corey.
I'm Gina.
I'm Ryan. Sleepy Ryan.
Touch sleepy boobs.
Well, that's not advised.
As long as they don't wake up.
It's the best of the world.